6, very familiar verses that we want to read, verses 37 through verse 45. Jesus, of course, is doing the speaking. It says, "All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day." The Jews then murmured to him, because he said, "I am the bread which came down from heaven." And they said, "Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he saith, I came down from heaven?" Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, "Murmur not among yourselves. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall be all taught of God. Every man therefore that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh unto me." The first part of this chapter, verses 1 through 13, we see the feeding of over 5,000. As a result of that miracle, the people thought that Jesus was a prophet, a wonderful teacher. We see that in verse 14. And they desired to make him their king. We see that in verse 15. Jesus, knowing this, departed into a mountain himself alone. Early in the evening, before it was dark, the disciples entered into a ship and went over the sea toward Capernaum. Verses 16 and 17, we see that darkness comes upon them. Verse 17, it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. We see eventually, of course, that there's a storm. Jesus arrives, miraculously brings them safely to Capernaum. We see that in verses 20 and 21. In verse 22, the day following. So now we're one day past the miraculous feeding. It's one day later, the very next day, from the miraculous feeding, the day following. And we read that those who had been miraculously fed, they come to the realization that Jesus and the apostles are no longer there. We see some boats from Tiberias arrive. They took these boats to the other side, arriving in Capernaum, and we see in verse 22 through verse 24, they come at the end of verse 24 and came to Capernaum seeking for Jesus. They found him, verse 25, and when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, "Rabbi, when camest thou hither?" As you read on in the chapter, you come to discover that they find where they found him was in the synagogue. Notice verse 59. "These things," that is what we have recorded here in John 6, "these things said he in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum." So they come to Capernaum, they're looking for Jesus, they find him. We see that they find him in the synagogue. Now, when they found him, a conversation ensued between them and him. And this, of course, would be in the hearing of all of those who were in the synagogue. And we know for a fact that it was in the hearing of the apostles. These individuals entered the synagogue with a question. When camest thou thither? Jesus immediately tells them of their sad spiritual state by exposing their motive in their motive for seeking him. Verse 26, Jesus answered them and said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled." So he exposes their motive. And then he rebukes them. Verse 27, he said, "Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath the Father sealed." So he's telling them that they ought to be more earnest for the spiritual than the physical. "The only reason you're looking for me," he said, "is for physical meat, and you ought to be more concerned for the spiritual rather than the physical. As the conversation proceeds between Christ and these individuals, it becomes very obvious that these individuals are unsaved individuals. In verse 28, they wanted to know what they had to do to be able to work the miracles like Jesus had done. And we see Christ's response in verse 29. Jesus answered and said unto them, "This is the work of God, that you believe on him whom he hath sent." They wanted to know how they could do the same miracles of Christ. And Jesus basically tells them that they need to be saved. And we see their response in verse 30. They said therefore unto him, "What sign showest thou them, that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work?" He just did a miracle of feeding over 5,000, in which they had personally experienced. So their response simply reveals their blindness and their ignorance concerning Christ. The conversation continues, and verse 36, Jesus says to them, "Ye have seen me, and believe not." And that brings us to our text, which also is a part of this conversation that is taking place in the synagogue. Jesus, in these verses, of course, reveals some wonderful truths about salvation, how it comes about. In verse 37 and verse 39, he declares that the Father has given him a people. The Father has the people which the Father has given me, which is a truth, of course, that Jesus often declared. We see that in John chapter 10, verses 27 through 29. The latter part of verse 29, he speaks of those whom the Father had given him. We see it several times in John chapter 17. He refers to those whom the Father had given him, which of course is just a plain declaration of the doctrine of election. But what it's speaking of is that there was a transaction that took place between God the Father and God the Son involving a people. This transaction, according to Ephesians 1, 3, and 4, 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 13, Revelation 17, verse 8, we see that this transaction took place before the foundation of the world, or before the beginning, before time. So those who were given to Christ by the Father, these are the same as who were ordained to eternal life that we read of in Acts 13 and verse 48. The very same ones who were appointed not to wrath, but appointed to obtain salvation that we read of in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 9. So the salvation of a soul involves a transaction that took place before the sinner was ever born. That took place before time. A transaction that took place between the Father and the Son. The Father giving the Son a people to save. Now, this transaction, of course, involved the purpose of God. Notice in John 6 and verse 39, "And this is the Father's will, which hath sent me." So this transaction involves the Father's will. Now, as this conversation takes place, as it proceeds between Christ and these individuals, their unsaved condition, their spiritual blindness, their spiritual ignorance becomes more and more manifest. We see their response to these teachings of Christ in verse 60. They said, "This is a hard or difficult saying. Who can hear it?" That is, who can bear it? Who can tolerate it? Their reaction to his teaching was one of offense. They took offense at the teaching of Jesus Christ. And as they were murmuring amongst themselves, Jesus asked them in verse 61, of course, knowing the answer, "Doth this offend you? That is, what I have spoken to you, does this offend you?" And then Jesus continues to emphasize the truth that he's been speaking. Notice in verse 63, "It is the Spirit that quickeneth, the flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not, for Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not, and who should betray him. And he said, Therefore said I unto you, that no man can come unto me," referring back to verse 44, "no man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father." The final result of this in verse 66, "From that time many of his disciples," talking about those who were following him, "went back and walked no more with him." These have gone away. Jesus immediately turns to the apostles who had heard this entire conversation, heard the entire teaching of Jesus Christ, and he asked them a question in verse 67. "Will ye also go away?" Peter's response in verse 68, "Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life, and we believe." Not only do we believe, we're sure that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. So these truths that Christ presented, from Peter's response, speaking for the apostles, shows that their conviction concerning Christ was strengthened. Their conviction concerning the truth that he taught was strengthened. Now in verses 37 through 45, we've looked at verses 37 through 44 many times. It's not our intent to look at those verses tonight in detail. But in those verses, Christ presents in very, very plain and clear terms some glorious truths regarding the salvation of those given to Jesus Christ. We see they were given to Christ for a purpose. They were given to Christ for a purpose. And that is God's purpose, which of course cannot be thwarted. In verse 39, again, "This is the Father's will." In regard to this, we read verse 38, "The will of him that sent me." And we read in verse 40, "And this is the will." This is the will of Him. People today get all caught up, and the reason is because they are offended by the same thing these individuals were offended by. What they got offended by is the flesh profiteth nothing. That offended them. Still offends people today. And people today get caught up in the will of man and salvation, as if God has no will at all. And we see that God has a purpose. This is the Father's will. This is the will of Him. Jesus Christ took custody of all that the Father had given Him. And He was sent of the Father to do the purpose, to do the Father's purpose concerning these that were given to Him. That is very plain. Secondly, there is a certainty concerning these individuals given to Christ. Verse 37 says, "All that the Father giveth me shall come to me." So there is an absolute certainty concerning these that were given of the Father to Christ. There is also a promise concerning this sure event that takes place in time, verse 37. "And him that cometh to me," who comes? "All that the Father giveth me shall come. And him that cometh to me, I will in no wise cast out." All of them shall come to Christ. And he says, when they do, individually, him that cometh to me, him is an individual, as they come individually, I will in no wise cast them out. I will not refuse them. Why? Because they were given to him of the Father, and he's come to do the Father's will concerning them. Not to do so, Christ would have to sin. And then, of course, he would cease to be. There is also a promise regarding the eternal security of these given to Christ. Verse 39, "I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day." I should lose nothing. Who's he talking about? Those whom the Father has given him before the foundation of the world. He will not lose a single one. You get to heaven, there will not be a single one missing. In the end, they will all be there. That's eternal security. We see also God's work in assuring that those given to him will come. We have the promise that all that the Father giveth me shall come to me. How can we be sure of that? Well, we can be sure of that because God does a work. Verse 44, "No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him." So they're going to come. And what is going to cause them to come is this drawing. It is an effectual drawing. Well, what if the Father draws and they do not come? That's not going to happen. It is the Father's will that they shall come. And He is going to draw them, ensuring that they will come. That is the only way that they will come. So it is an effectual drawing. What we want to notice tonight is verse 45. It is written in the prophets. It is written in the prophets. Referring to Isaiah 54:13, and we'll go there in a minute. It is written in the prophets, and they, who's the they? These given to the Father, these whom the Father is going to draw, these who shall come, shall be all taught of God. Every man, therefore, that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh to me. So we see, not only is there an effectual drawing, Part of that effectual drawing involves an effectual teaching of these individuals. Again, verse 45 is a quote of Isaiah 54. Notice Isaiah 54, verse 13. Isaiah 54, verse 13. "And all thy children shall be taught of the Lord. The result and great shall be the peace of thy children." Now, if we go back to John 6, verse 45. "They," those given of God to the Son, shall be all taught of God. We see that they will hear, they will learn, and what is the result? "Cometh to me." So part of the drawing involves this effectual teaching of God. And that's what we want to consider tonight, is the effectual teaching of God. It is an absolute necessity that the Father draw these in order for them to come. It is also an absolute necessity, it's included in the drawing, that every one of them will be taught. And the result of what they learn from this teaching causes them to come. We all, the moment when the Lord was bringing us to Himself, He was teaching us some things, and we learned some valuable, valuable things. Consider very briefly the characteristics of this teaching. God teaches plainly. What happened to the two disciples on the Emmaus Road happens to the soul that is being drawn to Christ. Luke 24 and verse 45 says, "Then open he their understanding." You won't learn until he does that. "Then opened he their understanding." That happens to every sinner who comes to Jesus Christ. It's part of the coming. It's part of the drawing. Again, it's very plain. Notice in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, speaking of the fact that Christ's teaching is very, very plain. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 6. "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts," that is the light, "to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." Light shining, and that's what the Lord does when He teaches these sinners who are coming to Him in order to draw them to Himself. He teaches them, and it's like light shining. Light shining is very obvious. What the Lord taught us when He was drawing us to Himself was very obvious truths. Light shining is something that is very evident. It is something that is very discernible. It is something that is perceptible. It is something that is unmistakable. It is something that is very pronounced. And every soul that is being drawn to Christ is taught of God. And God teaches them very plainly. God also teaches powerfully. It's effectual. He speaks to the soul. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 4 and 5, "For our gospel came not unto you in word only, but also in power." Talking about their salvation. And that's what God teaches us when we were being drawn to Christ. We were taught some truths that caused us to come. And these were very powerful. That is, they transformed us. So all of these who will come, part of the drawing process is that God teaches them some truths. So let's consider the lessons that every soul who has ever come to Christ was taught. Now, they may have forgotten them, but everyone who has truly been regenerated were taught these truths. It was part of the drawing process. They are taught of God, first of all, the exceeding sinfulness of sin. Romans 7, verse 13, Paul talks about how the law, that's what God uses to teach us. Galatians says it was our schoolmaster. The law displayed the exceeding sinfulness of sin. Every sinner in the drawing process is taught the exceeding sinfulness of sin. Before that lesson is taught, there is a general notion, an awareness of sin. Man is born with a general notion and awareness of sin. That's why you could ask anybody, do you know you're a sinner? Everybody will admit, yeah, I suppose I'm a sinner. Before this teaching, there is an innate knowledge of sin, a speculative knowledge of sin. But I want to say, just as there is a world of difference between seeing a roaring lion in a painting and an actual roaring lion right there, two entirely different things. And it's two entirely different things. Do you realize that you've sinned against God and what God teaches? So there's masses today who are supposedly winning souls to Christ who are trying to do so bypassing God's teaching, the sinner, a truth about the sinfulness of sins. So, in drawing the sinner to Christ, the sinner is made to personally feel their sin. In feeling our sin, we are taught that sin is loathsome, that sin is vile, that it is filthy, that it is wicked, it's shameful, it's corrupt, it's enslaving. It has caused alienation and estrangement. And I believe every sinner that is being drawn to Jesus Christ in the drawing process is taught the sinfulness of sin. It's that first teaching that makes them so miserable, that they try to escape it. But the teaching is effectual. You can't escape it. If God is drawing, He's teaching that lesson, the exceeding sinfulness of sin. He also teaches, these individuals are taught of God the condemnation which hangs over them because of sin. John chapter 3 and verse 18, we read, condemned already. John 3, verse 36, the wrath of God abideth on him. Romans 6, verse 23, for the wages of sin is death. That's talking about condemnation. Galatians 3, verse 10, cursed is everyone that continueth not in the things which are written in the book of the law to do them. In Ephesians 2, verse 3, we're by nature the children of wrath, even as others. So, in drawing the sinner to Christ, the sinner is made to personally feel God's sentence of condemnation upon them. They are made to personally feel that they are cursed, doomed, and damned because of sin. Because of their sin. They are made to personally feel God's displeasure with their sin. This nonsense, just admit you're a sinner. You bypass several things, but you bypass this feeling of God's displeasure, God's indignation, God's wrath hanging over you because of your sin. So this is when he teaches, in drawing the sinner, he teaches the condemnation due their sin, teaching them the misery, the pain, and the suffering of sin. And these are lessons that are learned as the sinner comes to Jesus Christ. That's why if I'm talking to one who is of the Arminian persuasion, I'm going to try and get them to go back to the day where they say they were saved. Because if they are, they learn these truths that day. They may have forgotten them. Perhaps their memory needs to be jogged, or perhaps the day never happened. It's one or the other. Thirdly, they are taught of God that deliverance is the most important matter. So the sinner has been taught the sinfulness of sin, has been taught what their sin deserves, the condemnation and the curse of God. Well, that brings the sinner to realize, my deliverance, this is the most important, this is the only thing that matters. This is the only thing that matters. The Philippian jailer cried out, what must I do to be saved? That was the only thing that mattered to him at that moment. Nothing else mattered. And be sure of this, if you're talking to a lost sinner and they keep changing the subject, God isn't dealing with them necessarily. Because this is once they've learned these two lessons, the sinfulness of sin, the condemnation that sin deserves, nothing else matters. They learn those two things, nothing else matters. Now the most important thing is, how can I be delivered? How can I be delivered? That truth is taught in Matthew 16, verse 26. If a man gain the whole world and lose his own soul, it profiteth nothing. So the sinner is taught the value of their soul. Also part of this teaching, they are taught of God the utter futility of their efforts to save themselves. Every sinner is taught that is coming to Christ. In the process of coming, in the process of drawing, they are taught the utter futility of all their efforts. And that is why the sinner is brought to see, I have nothing to offer. There's nothing I can do to save myself. Nothing. The utter futility of all self-effort. He also teaches the suitability and the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. And I believe these things are taught in this order that we're presenting them. The sinfulness of sin. What our sin deserves. We see, we are taught that deliverance then becomes the most important thing. But in discovering that deliverance is the most important thing, we discover that we can't save ourselves. And that's when the Lord teaches us the lesson that Jesus Christ is sufficient. Now our attention is on Him. Dwells on our sins, turns our attention to the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. And every sinner in this drawing process is taught of God to abandon their sin. To leave their sin, to leave their former ways, and to come to Jesus Christ. Notice Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. And verse 7. Isaiah 55, verse 7. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. And let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him. And we see that he will abundantly pardon. The sinner is taught this. They are also taught the absolute necessity. They are taught that Christ is sufficient. They are taught that they need to turn from their sins. And they are taught the absolute necessity of coming to Christ. The end result is they come. It's part of the drawing. So you see, it's really not true to say concerning a saved person, concerning the doctrine of salvation, well, they've never been taught. That's not so. They were taught when they came. Or they were taught, that's what caused them to come. It was the part of the drawing process. Now, they may not have been taught anything since then. That may very well be so. But if they're truly saved, they were taught these truths that offend almost everyone. They were taught these things. Damnation lies in the neglect of Jesus Christ. And that's why the last lesson we're taught is come to Christ. In light of everything we've said, a man by the name of Robert Fulghum wrote a book, All I Really Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And, I mean, there's a whole chart. It's pretty funny. But it's true. It's really true. What he's saying is everything I needed to know, I learned those foundations in kindergarten. And that is true. Just some examples that he mentions. Share everything. Well, that'd be a good way to live. Play fair. Don't hit people. These are things you learned in kindergarten. Put things back where you found them. Clean up your mess. Flush. Don't take things that aren't yours. Say you're sorry when you hurt someone. Wash your hands before you eat. On and on it goes. These are all lessons you learn before kindergarten or in kindergarten. But you look over the lessons that we learned in spiritual kindergarten when we were being drawn to Jesus Christ. Look over those lessons. The sinfulness of sin. What sin deserves. The soul is the most important matter. The futility of man. The suitability and sufficiency of Jesus Christ. The need to abandon sin. And the need to come to Jesus Christ. We learned all of those things when He was drawing us. And if you look at all of those things, are not these the basic truths necessary to living the Christian life? We need to continue to learn and grow in those truths. The truths that we all learned in spiritual kindergarten before we ever came to church. Before we were ever taught by someone who knew the Bible, God taught us these truths. And they are foundational to living the Christian life. You know how much pain you will be spared if you continue to learn the lesson of the sinfulness of sin? And what sin deserves, because when we see what sin deserves and we see that we're saved, what's that? That's grace. And that's a motivation to serve. That lesson that the soul is the most important matter. The day God saved my soul, nothing else mattered. I didn't know anybody else was in the room. Nothing else mattered. The soul was the most important thing. And oh, how many have forgotten that lesson if they ever learned it. The futility of man's efforts. How many have forgotten that? The sufficiency of Christ. The need to abandon sin. The need to come to Christ. If we practice these truths, the ones we learned while we were being drawn, they'll help us all through life. So it is true. All that I ever needed to know, I learned in kindergarten. That's true. Those foundations that we need to live the Christian life were laid. Now we need to continue to learn them and we need to advance in those areas. But the foundation was laid when God was drawing us to Himself. So God, when He saved our soul, in order to draw us, He taught us. The teaching was effectual, and we came. And we came. We couldn't do anything else. People will say, well, almost came. No. God is dealing. There's no almost about it. You come. You come. Again, Agrippa said to Paul, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. I don't think he was talking about salvation there. I think he was talking about a Christian, being a follower of Jesus Christ. I don't think Agrippa really knew about salvation. He's simply saying, almost you are persuading me to be a follower of Jesus Christ. There aren't any almost saved people. There's no such thing. You're either saved or unsaved. There's no almost saved. So how grateful we ought to be for these truths that God taught us when He drew us. I would have never came had He not drawn. And part of the drawing was this teaching. He taught us. He taught us. So how thankful we ought to be. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us. Verse 7.